I wish to extend my heartfelt greetings to the newly elected administration of the RCA. I didn't participate in the campaign. Once the administration is elected, I feel I have a right to congratulate that administration. And particularly, I extend my sincere greetings to my good friend and Talmid Muvek, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, as the new president of the Rabbinical Council of America. I hope and pray that Rabbi Schoenfeld, an outstanding Talmid Chacham, a Shavdanam who is committed to Talmud Torah in the literal sense of the word, and a sincere Yirei Shamayim and moral personality, who will lead the RCA from strength to strength. And let me say a few words of flattery to you. You have a great organization. Never mind the critics. Forget about them. Your people stand guard like the Mishmar of Gvul Eretz Yisrael in remote communities, in far cities, and sometimes in God-forsaken corners of the big and great United States. You are the defenders of the Kodesh Yisrael, and you are the Shemrei Agachenes. And as I said quite often, and I repeat it today, the battle in which we are engaged has not been won as yet, not at all. If people are over-optimistic and think of American Jewry in terms of Williamsburg and Brookline and Borough Park, and perhaps Miami Beach, a few corners, are making a terrible mistake. American Jewry is drifting and drifting fast toward complete assimilation and disintegration, spiritual disintegration. The destination is still far away, and the march is a long one. I hope that the new administration, with its new president, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, with the cooperation of Rabbi Fleven, will continue to move on persistently and consistently toward that destination. I wish also to thank my friend and colleague, Rabbi Shlomo Goren, for his presence at the convention. I am sorry to have missed his address last night. The fault was not mine, but of the pilot, I don't know. I wish him health, vigor and success in his struggle for a Torah Eretz Israel. And of late, he has taken a firm attitude on vital issues, and I hope and pray that he will win the battle. Now, with your permission, I need your permission for that. I wish to inject a personal note. Let me thank you. Whether I am doing the right thing or not, I don't know. But let me thank you for your kindness and hospitality, which you have displayed toward my brother, Baron Soloveitchik, last Tuesday night. Klumoch may be ochiv, I mean, brother is disqualified to appear as a witness on behalf of his brother, but I cannot suppress sense of urgency in telling you that my brother is one of the Gdele Ador as far as Torah is concerned. He has chassidus. I don't mean organized chassidus. I mean individual chassidus. He is a chassid b'chol ma'aseh. Whoever knows him will agree with me. He's a saintly person. A kind gesture to us, a great person, a saintly person, in times of trouble, goes a long way. I thank you very much, Father. Now let me get to the Shira. Of late, I have been involved a great deal in Chumash, in Tanakh. It is because I say a Parsha Chumash every Saturday night in Boston, so I try to understand the Chumash, and the way I try to analyze, is it audible what I say?
Yes.
The way I try to analyze the complicated sugya, Teresh B'Ksavah, Teresh B'Alpeh are equal as to their sanctity and as to their depth and sleep. Yeah. What I'm going to tell you today is about Chukas, Parshas Chukas. It's a difficult parsha. I have tried to explain to you the continuity and the proper development of the theme of Parsha Baleichu at the reception tent of Rabbi Klevin's honor. I don't know whether everyone heard what I said, because Rabbi Holzer was in charge of the acoustics. I mean, you see, with Rabbi Holzer together, maybe it's a good team. But this time, I believe it's someone else. He's in charge of the public address system. This time I'm going to speak about Chukas. It is the portion which we'll read, Saturday morning. I've always been intrigued by certain figures in the Tanakh, in Chumash. I've always been intrigued by Abraham, by Yosef, the pathblazers, the pioneers, the ones whom the world did not understand, failed to understand, and were persecuted and hated because of the world, ahead of society. And it always intrigued me the great, outstanding, the personality of our teacher and master, Moshe Rabbeinu, particularly the tragedy in his life. He was not only great, the greatest of all men, he was a tragic personality. And the story of Moshe's tragedy is told in many places. However, Chukas is as contains the digest, the very essence of Moshe's tragedy. And that's exactly what I'm going to describe and to analyze. I'm not going to tell you new things. Whatever I'll tell you, you know. What I'm going is, for Chumash is necessary a certain mood. The Germans call Stimmung, a certain mood. And I want to create, today a certain mood. If one will experience that particular mood, he'll be able to understand, the figure of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the paradoxical tragedy which happened and took place in his life. Let's start with the beginning. The section dealing with the Porah Aduma, and that's why he called the portion of the week Chukas, should be an appendix to the portions of Tzav or Shmini. Or perhaps to Trumot Tzave or Kisisa, where the Torah tells us about Moses and Aaron initiating the service in the Mishkan. According to our tradition, the Parshas Porah was revealed to Moshe when the Parshas HaMishkan was given to him, not later. And the first Porah Adumah, which was offered on the eighth day, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, of the Miluim. I could also, from Truma, through the Tzaveh, Kisisa, Yaakov, Tkudei, Vayikro, Tzav, Shmini, the Parshas Porah Adumah, if inserted, would have been in the proper place, in proper context. Then there is another possibility. We could also imagine the insertion of the Porah Aduma into Tazria Metzera for a simple reason, because those parshas deal with the principles of Tumah, Tumas Metzera, Tumas Sheretz, Tumas Zov, Zovo, Nido, Yeres, Sodite. After all, the Parshas Por Aduma deals with Tumas Mes. Tumas Mes would have beautifully. I mean, if he said it, there would be continuity from Tumas Metzero and Tumas Zov and Zovo to Tumas Mes. So within the framework of other Tumas, the Parshas Por Aduma would have completed, I mean, the whole institution of Tumah. However, the Torah apparently thought differently and inserted Parsha Dumah, the Parsha Sporo, between Kerach and Vayaveyu Koloedo, Midbar Tzin, Vachedesh Orishen, Vatom Hashem Miriam Vatekov Hashem. The inclusion of Tumas Mes of Mongod or Tumas would have been appropriate and understandable. But the insertion of Torah Adume into the Parshas of Bamidbar, particularly into Parshas Kerach, or what we call Parshas Chukas, is incomprehensible. Two questions arise. First, the sequence within the Sefer Bamidbar of the sections Chukas, Kerach, Bishalach is puzzling. What is there in common between the story of Shlavi? Excuse me. I wrote my manuscript Shlach. Shlach and Kerach and Chukas. What is there in common between the story of Kerach and Shlach and Chukas, Tumas Mes? What is there in common? Where is the continuity between the first part of Chukas dealing with Pora Adumo and the following chapter relating the story of Miriam's death and Meimei River, the famous Meimei River episode? Or then the refusal of Edom to give right of passage to Israel. In a word, the first part of Chukas belongs into the context of the Avedis HaMishkan, not into a parsha concerned with Meimei River or the war against Sichon Melech HaMeri or Neg Melech HaBoshet. Let us just analyze the word Chukas. The laws concerning Pora Aduma were classified by our rabbis as unintelligible and mysterious, enigmatic laws. And they apparently detected in the term chukko or chik the element of incomprehensibility or non-rationality. Apparently, the Chazal speak of daiti shalod or meshiv alayim. The human mind is incapable of assimilating those laws. Asotan v'mesalem, again, Meshivim alayim. The Satan and our foes ridicule and abuse them. Our rabbis, speaking about chukim, have not tried to rationalize them. No one has ever tried, even though Rashi quotes Rav Meisha Darshan, we attempted to somehow to interpret the Pora Aduma, yes. But we'll see later that he did not try to explain, he tried to interpret, or the difference in explanation and interpretation. However, most of our Chazal have acknowledged the antinomic character of Pora Aduma. They only said that we must accept all of them as a whole, with the inner contradictions and antithetic motifs. We must not ask for an explanation or motivation. What Chazal demanded vis-à-vis Pora Aduma or Olchukim is what is known in philosophy, particularly in philosophy of religion, the act of suspension of judgment. There are certain situations, there are certain times, when a man, in order to save himself, has to suspend his judgment. Sometimes a man has got to use his judgment. Of course, the greatest good God has bestowed upon man. The reason, the love of, but in certain situations, under certain circumstances, suspension of judgment is recommended. When judgment is suspended, man has to act in accordance with the unscrutable will of the Almighty. Even though his logos, the logos of man, is perplexed and confused, because it's incumbent upon man in certain situations to suspend his judgment. However, even though it is forbidden to ask for motivation, for the motives, or for the reasoning pertaining to certain divine categorical imperatives and norms, we yet may inquire as to the interpretation of the law. There's a difference between explanation and interpretation. Basically, it is in science itself. There are certain scientific disciplines which deal with explanation. There are other scientific disciplines which deal not with explanation, but with interpretation. The difference is related to the question. Explanation answers the question either why or the question of how. When you take physics, it's the same as explanatory scientific discipline. It deals with the cause. Physics doesn't ask why, because why is not a scientific question, basically. It's a metaphysical question. Science has never bothered to give the answer. But the question of how, the question is how does it function? And by establishing a relationship between cause and effect, between two phenomena, A and B or C and D, and expressing this dependence of mutual dependence of two phenomena in terms of mathematical equation, is the answer of how is given. How is it? This is, of course, if you know the how, you can predict, of course. But science is not physics or chemistry, particularly mathematical exact sciences, is not interested in predicting events. It's interesting in explaining not the why of the event, but the how of the event. This is one group. There is another group in which you don't explain at all. You simply interpret the phenomenon. Interpretation is related to another question, not to why, nor to how, but to what? The question of what? What is it? Never mind the why, never mind the how it functions. What is it? And the answer is not an explanatory answer, but a descriptive one. You describe a phenomenon. Take, for instance, general botany, or general zoology, first of all, is the question of what? If you want to explain the how, you'll go to organic chemistry. You'll go to organic chemistry. Organic chemistry is concerned with the how. But the botanic, the classification of the plant, the world of plant, classification of the world of the animal, is related to the question of what. I believe in Chukim Mishpatim, we must not ask the question of why particularly. Because why is in general a foolish question to ask. Even in regard to mitzvahs which are, in our opinion, quite meaningful. Because when you ask about a human being why, you ask what motivated him. And so you say that and that motivated. And usually motive lies outside of my reach. In order to reach something A, I am inclined to engage in a series of actions which will finally lead me to to the attainment of the something which is yet outside of my reach, but it cannot be applied to the Almighty. You cannot say why. The answer, as far as why is concerned, because he wills it. You see, when you ask a person why is he traveling to New York by plane, the answer, because he wills it, is, you understand? There is no answer at all. It doesn't explain. So I ask, why does he will it? But when you ask for, as far as HaKadosh Baruch is concerned, the Almighty, why did he create the world? You don't have to answer, because he is kind and wants to bestow kindness upon people. Answer, because he willed it. And this itself, I mean, takes care of the problem. Realization of God's will in itself is the most precious and the greatest ultimate goal. So in general, the question of asking why or how with regard to mitzvahs is completely nonsensical. However, of course, when it comes to chukim, it's forbidden. However, but the question of what can be asked. Can be asked about everything under the sun. What does what in the mitzvah mean? What does it mean if I ask? If I ask why Torah Adumah, there's no answer. If I ask how Torah Adumah functions, no answer. If I ask what is Torah Adumah, so then there's an answer should be given. Namely, what does it mean? It means, what is the meaning of Torah Adumah of the Chayik as far as I am concerned? What does the Chayik tell me? Not why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu ordain that law. This is an unanswerable question and shouldn't be even raised. The question is, what does the Torah Adumah tell me? What is the spiritual message in the Torah Adumah, or in the law of Torah Adumah, in the Parshas Torah Adumah, that I can assimilate into my worldview? What is the spiritual message of the Torah Adumah, which belongs into my world outlook? Nachmanides, Ramban, as well as the Ramban, said many times, emphasized time and again, that the element of Aveda Shebelev, of course the Ramban applies Aveda Shebelev to a single mitzvah, namely the Tzile. But however, the Ramban himself, Amir Nebuchim, and the Ramban and Sefer HaMitzvahs agreed, I mean, there's no controversy between them, that Aveda Shebelev includes more than Tzile. It is a modality. It tells men how to live, how to worship God. It is a question how to worship God. The Aveda Shebelev must be present in every religious act, in the ritual as well as in the moral. And what does Aveda Shebelev mean? The Ramban gives the famous example. What does Aveda Shebelev mean? And basically it's a Gemara in Chagigah. Gemara in Chagigah tells us, with regard to the Pasuk in Malachi, Yitzosem Urisem, Ben Tzadik L'Rosho, Ben Neved Elekim, Asholei Avodei, and the Gemara asks, Aino Tzadik, Aino Rosho, Aino Eved Elekim, Aino Lei Avodei, why did the Pasuk repeat? And the Gemara gives a strange answer. Eved Elekim, the Lei Avodei, Tavayu Tzadik Igmirin, you know, they are both Tzadik Igmirin. But one can be a Tzadik Gomor and yet not be an Eved Elekim. Eved Elekim is a separate quality. And the Gemara gives the famous example, when the day Meshene Pirke Meir Pomim, Meshene Pirke Meir Vachas Pomim. The Ramban, this is exactly what the Gemara meant. The Ramban says as follows. And of course, he says it in three words. I'll use a few more. He says as follows. For instance, let us say, we are accepted the viewpoint mitzvah sin and tzriches kavonim. Mitzvah doesn't require kavon. So if I come into the house, so if it rains, and I walk into the sukkah, and the sukkah gives me some protection, some kind of mitzvah. Even though I did not intend to enter the sukkah because of the mitzvah, because of the commandment that sukkah stays for Shiva Yamin, but because in order to provide, I was looking for protection against the rain, I'm a kind of mitzvah. If mitzvah is in Tzuraskavonim, there's quite a number of Rishenim who have accepted the view mitzvah is in Tzuraskavonim. So, as a mitzvah, if you fulfill the mitzvah, you'll be rewarded, no doubt about it. So the Ramban asked very well, is it to be considered a Eved Elokim? Certainly not. In order to be an Eved Elokim is not enough to be yet to the mitzvah, to discharge my duty. More is demanded. More is required, namely, commitment, emotional warmth, joy, love, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and particularly, as I said before, joy in doing it. Eved Elokim means Kima Mitzvah can be achieved through a mechanical approach to mitzvahs. A misnagad is also a kind of mitzvah. What did Chassidus add? I mean, sometimes I'm afraid that Chassidus have lost it already. But what did Chassidus of old, what did it add? Avedas Elokim. Avedas Elokim. As a matter of fact, that time you quote the Gemara in Chagigah and interpret it in the same manner. Avedas Elokim. Not just to discharge your duty, but to enjoy, to rejoice in, and to love the mitzvah. This is Mitzase Morise Metzadek Lavoshe, means a strict misnaget, or a tzadek amet. Ufosuz mitzvah sulzat v'shem yirat kutsche brichot. Umbenevi lakim, l'ashale avodes, it's a different representative. It's representative worships God. You understand very well that all that, the Avedis Elokim is unattainable, is the Chayk does not deliver any message to us. If there is no idea suggested by the Chok, so how can we be Avedis Elokim? In order to offer God my heart and my soul, in order to serve Him, inwardly, with joy and love, one thing is indispensable. Understanding of and involvement of the Logos in the Maaseh Mitzvah. The Logos has got to be involved. We are rational beings. We cannot get enthusiastic. Experience the great happiness, the great bliss of fulfilling a divine commandment, if the Logos is neutral and the Logos is shut out of that involvement. In order to involve the Logos, and this is indispensable for attaining the rank of Eved Elokim, so the Logos has got understanding. Not the why, nor the how, but at least what. We have no right to explain Chukim. We have a duty to interpret Chukim. Of course, it is forbidden to raise the question, why did the Almighty command us to act in such an unintelligible way? However, it is permitted, and I owe it to myself, to raise another question. What does the mitzvah mean to me? How am I to understand, not the reason for the mitzvah, but the essence of the latter, as an integral part of my service of God? You know, I mean, I want to tell you, this is not mine. The Ramban says it in Parshas Kesetze. I mean, you'll find different vocabulary there. In Parshas Kesetze, with regard to Shiluach HaKan, the Gemara says, Shekodesh B'divre, Admideshim Shekodesh Baruch Hu, Gzeres, not Rachmin. So the Ramban says, does it mean that I cannot say to people that the fact that there is forbidden, I mean, snatching away the youngsters from the mother shows that there is concerned with human mercy and kindness. Yes, so the Ramban answers what I told you. It's a difference how you ask the question. Is the question of why or it's a question of what. Of course, you won't find the vocabulary in Rambam, but this is the substance. I want you to look up in Rambam. This is the substance of the Rambam answer. Why the mitzvah was formulated by the Almighty, we don't know. But what the mitzvah means to me, how can I integrate and assimilate the mitzvah in my total religious consciousness and world outlook and eye awareness? That's a question which is not only permissible, more than that. I'm duty bound to raise this question. Now let me approach Pora Aduma, not with the yardstick of why, but with the yardstick of what. Raise the what question of Pora Aduma. Not the why question, how's it going? And I believe that Meshach Darshan, whom Rashi quotes in today's Sefer, did not mean to explain Pora Aduma, but he meant to describe Pora Aduma. He was not concerned with the question of why, but with the question of what. What does it mean to you? What does it mean to me? To Meshach Darshan Pora Aduma meant atonement for the evil, for the great historic sin which has changed Jewish history. How do we experience this Chukas HaTeira? It's a question. As I said before, Aveda Shemlekim requires experience, not a mechanical act. How am I to experience this Chukas HaTeira? What kind of an experience? For instance, when I read about Shema Yisrael, when I say Shema Yisrael, I experience my closeness to God, my cleaving to Him, and so forth. Yeah. But what am I to expose when the Valkyrie to experience, when the Valkyrie will read next Shabbos, V'daber al Hashem al Meshev al Arim Leimel Zeshchut al Satero Dabro al Bnei Yisrael. What is the central motif, not motive, but motif of the whole institution of Torah Adam? What is so peculiar about that parasha? What does the uniqueness of the commandment consist of? Chazal spoke about Chukas Poro. Poro is unique, singular, cannot be spelled out in rational idioms and so forth. Basically, why only Poro? I could find many mitzvahs. Chazal do mention more mitzvahs, but there is going to mention Shatnes, Kodram mentions Kobones, Soyra Mishtaleach is the example par excellence, yes, of non-rationality of certain commandments. But still, what Chazal looked upon Pora Aduma as the central chik. This chukas atero, chukoy yivim l'chishus la'am. This is the central. Chukas Pora Aduma stands out among other chukim. It is representative, indicative. What is it? What is so unintelligible in Chukas Pora Aduma? I believe that we will do well if we will abandon the popular approach to the parasha, which identifies the singularity with the ceremonial aspect of the offering of the Pora Aduma. Usually, why is Pora Aduma strange? This entire name, Itam, in general, the whole the Medrash says, It's magical. It means the ceremonial aspect represents the chukah. For instance, the mere fact that it's a sacrifice which is offered not in Beis Hamikdash, but outside of Shalish Mach, Shlesha Machneis, while there is a law against Shchut Echutz, the Torah nevertheless has commanded us to offer Chut L'Shlesha Machneis, Chut L'Yerushalayim, and so forth and so on. Then the burning of the Pora Aduma and its conversion into ashes, and the mixing of the ashes with spring water, All that is mystifying, no doubt about it. However, I do not believe in the singularity of the precept expresses itself through the ceremonial aspect. I believe the singularity of the paradume lies somewhere else. We should rather pay attention not to the paradume. If you have the parsha of paradume, you first the offering of the parah, the loss pertaining to the offering of the parah, to the burning of the parah, and then the mixing, the ashes with spring water, correct? Yeah, and then what do you have? The sprinkle, yeah, and then. Parish station was good, yeah, and then what do you have? The mother parsha. Huh? Too much mess, a parsha of too much mess. This a teiro odum ki yom uzboeya. Interesting is, I said before, Tumas Mess has not been mentioned. In Tazria, Metzero, where all Tumas were mentioned. Nothing of Mess was mentioned. In the Meir, we have an inkling of Tumas Mess. Because the Meir Alekian in Bnei Arin, Nefesh Le'yitamot. In Nosei, we have an inkling, an allusion, a hint of Tumas Mess. Because Kol Nafshes Meis Le'yove. But there is no Tumas Mess. We could not derive from the Parshas Kun in the Meir, from Parshas Nozer in Nosei, that there is Tumas Mess. The prohibition might be being formulated against entering a Neila Mess, but without any consequences. Too many consequences. The first time that the Torah tells us about Mess, that it contaminates, it defiles, it metamei, is in the Parshas Paraduma. And I believe the uniqueness which Chazal has emphasized is not to be detected in the ceremonial or ritualistic aspect of offering the poor, but in Tumas Mess. What is so unique about Tumas Mess? Tumas Mess differs basically from all other Tumas. And this is the strange hook. These Teras. The Torah has never said Zei Satero Odom Ki Yitame Bishar. The Torah has never said Zei Satero Odom Ki Yitame Bizovo Ebizov Ebin Tzero. Never. But when it comes to Mess, the Torah with the same solemnity, the Torah has began the Parshas Por Adumo Zei Shuka Satero. The Torah also means the same solemnity. The Torah says, Zeis HaTorah, Rodom Ki Yomuz Boel. What is this? Why there is a certain solemnity to be detected? What is it? Because Tumas Mess is something which is unique and singular and not to be classified among other Tumas. And that's the reason why the Torah has never mentioned Tumas Mess when the Torah spoke about all kinds of Tumas. It's something new, something singular, and something strange. First of all, I'll give you an example. Akein is muta letamei b'sheret, b'zov, b'mitzere. Akein is being enjoined from Tumas. Mess, that's all. The same is true of Moser. Huh? What do you mean, Craven? Yes, Kreish, plus Tumas Mess. Akein is being enjoined from Tumas Mess. It's not being enjoined from Sheret. From Sheret. I remind myself, I had an encounter quite a number of years ago with one of the so-called representatives of Chochmas Yisrael, very outstanding. And he told me that lately they have discovered a parchment, Megillah, in which, it is stated unequivocally that Akein is enjoined from contaminating or defiling himself with Sheret. Yeah. So I said to him, so do you take it seriously? Said, of course, seriously. They have the answer right away. It's a different Kabbalah, a different tradition. They operate with this these traditions in the tour.
Right.
So I said, do you know? So I mentioned to him a name, which was known to him, and he didn't like the person. They told the person, do you know him? I said, yes. What is he, a scholar? I'm Moritz, a Bruder Reise. So only we have monopoly of a Burin mit der Reise. It's 1500 years there were Burin as well, so a Bur wrote on me. Since there was no paper, he had to write on parchment. He had to write on parchment, no? So you found now he's Chidushiter, no? It's a true story. But anyway, already we see that Thomas Mess is a Tumet singular in certain ways. Second, what troubles my mind more than anything else is the method of cleansing the Tumet from the Tumet. Cleansing in all Tumets, there's no exception. The only exception is Tumet Mess. But with no other exception, is Tvile the cleansing factor of the Tomei. And Tvile the Mikveh, Rachat Yodo Gamayim, Tvile the Mikveh removes all kinds and all forms of Tomei. The Rachat Yodo Gamayim, the Tomei. Rachat Yodo Gamayim is the only cleansing agent which restores one's purity. However, this applies to all Tumas. There is one exception of Tumas Mess. Tumas Mess is not removed to Tvile alone. Immersion in the mikveh does not suffice. It is indispensable, but not sufficient. In order that the Tumas Mess regain its previous tahara status, what is necessary, what was recommended by the Torah, the sprinkling of mechatos is indispensable. The sprinkling is done twice on the third and the seventh day. Otherwise, the person is considered a Tomei Mess and is enjoined from entering the Mishkan or the Mikdash. The real question to be asked is the following one. Why did the Torah single out Tomei Mess? Why should not the latter be subject to the same universal cleansing through immersion in a mikveh like any other tamei? What lies at the root of that distinction, or rather I would say distinctiveness, of tamei, of Tumas Mess? Reading the parsha, if you read the parsha carefully, you have a chance, Saturday morning for Kriyas Torah, we are impressed by the emphasis which the Torah lays upon the Azoye as the inevitable element of cleansing. Who is Chate Bayim Ashlishi Bayim Ashvi? Enough, yes. But the Torah repeats the negative. Vimrei Yishchate Layita. Let him not think in terms of Tvilei alone. That's what the Torah demands. Well, why should the Torah repeat the way it's happening, you know? Whatever the Torah says in the, something in the positive, we know very well if we don't comply with the positive law, so you don't attain the particular objective. Why is the Torah so emphatic here? The way it's happening, as if the Torah warns us not to take the Azoyes lightly and not to equate the Tumas Mess with other Tumas. For the Azuis are the very essence of Tahare. Now I'll ask the what. What does it symbolize? What story does it tell us? What message does it deliver to us? I believe that in the peculiar method of cleansing the Tomei Mess, we find, or rather the peculiar method of cleansing the Tomei Mess is indicative of a human situation, of the metaphysique of man, and of the tragedy of man. Man is a great being, man is also a tragic being. And that tragedy of man as a being came to expression in the institution of Azur. And this is the great chok, which is unintelligible, not understandable, mystifies us. Why should man, the greatest, the king of all creatures in the universe, exist in distress, and why should his life be a tragic one? The basic difference between immersion and the sprinkling of mechatras lies in one fact. What's the basic difference? I understand physically the difference. I emerge, I duck in the body of water, and I submerge, and as I mean sprinkling, I understand the physical act. But what is semantically the difference? In the meaning, there are meaningfulness to Tzviwe, the Ram tried. And I submerge, and as I mean sprinkling, I understand the physical act. But what is semantically the difference? In the meaning, there are meaningfulness to Tzviwe, the Ram tried very hard, and that's McCoy is to explain Tzviwe. And he says, because Akosov is not explaining the why, he's explaining the what. He says it. Yes. But Tzviwe has an experience. So let us take Tzviwe as an experience and Azoy as an experience. How do they differ? Physically, as acts, of course it is. You have to submerge my whole body in the water, although you just sprinkle, you spray water. Yeah. But I have an experience, after all, it's a religious experience with it. And Tzviwe is a great experience. Right? Gerus depends upon Tzviwe. It's a great experience. Not only Tzviwe is not cleansed, it's not only the body, but the soul as well, One enters the community, the covenantal community, through Tzviwe. There is an experience to Tzviwe. And there is, of course, experience to Azoi, because it's very emphasized, and repeatedly emphasized, that Azoi, as far as Tzviwe Mes is concerned, is indispensable. Don't try to eliminate Azoi, because you remain in Tzviwe Mes. Asher Lei Yizkata is Midas Hashem Tine, Rinichas HaNefesh Yimei HaMeh HaMeh. As experiences. I believe the basic difference between immersion and sprinkling of the Mechatas lies in one fact. Tzviwe is accomplished by the Tomei himself, while Azoe is performed by somebody else. As far as Tzviwe is concerned, their Tomeiness must shed off his Tumei. He himself must submerge in the mitzvah. No one can help him. The Tomei to immerse, he must bow himself, must bow his head and bend his knees in order, to submerge, to immerse. No one else cleanses him. He cleans himself. He plunges into a lake or a sea or a river. He does the submerging and he emerges from the lake or the sea or the river. A toyer, clean. He is clean because of his own effort. Had he been lazy, had he suffered from hydrophobia, he could have never attained cleanliness. And halachically it's correct. You can tell me what the person is. He's sick, so you help him into the mikveh. Halachically, Tzviwe is an act which is performed by the Tomei. It's usually performed by the Tomei, always. Every aspect of Tzviwe, is up to the Tomei himself. But Alpidin is Toval, the Maisei Tzviwe itself. The Maisei Tzviwe itself is an act, the physical act, means it has a reflexive note. It's a spoil. Right? We use the car, but it's more a spoil. Man, and it's very simple, man defiles himself. Man must cleanse himself. No one else can pronounce him toher if he doesn't pronounce himself toher. Human freedom and human creativity and human capability to accomplish, to change a status is symbolized through Tefillah. Human initiative, human firmness, and human capability to raise himself to great, to new heights is expressed through Tefillah. I would say Tefillah is the symbol of Bechira Chofshis. You want to stay Tamei? It's your pleasure. Don't immerse in the mikveh so you remain Tamei for the rest of your life. You want Tahare? No one else can give it to you. No one has it. You have it within your own self. If you are ready to pull yourself up, by your own bootstraps, all right. If not, you remain Tamei. As regards Azoe, the situation is a reverse. The Tomei cannot sprinkle Mechatos upon himself. For a simple reason, you know why? What? What is a Kena? It's nothing to do with a Kena. Azoe has nothing to do with Kena. Okay. The Tomei cannot be Mazoe, cannot sprinkle Mechatos himself for a simple reason. Because he's a Tomei. For a simple reason. This is the old story. How is that Tomei? He's a Toyer al Tomei. That Toyer is somebody else. The Tomei cannot sprinkle Mechatos upon himself. Another person must do it. V'hizo atoyer al Tomei. The clean person must spray or sprinkle the Mechatos on the unclean person. Here we come across the antithesis. The human being who defiles himself cannot liberate himself from the state of non-cleanliness. Someone else who is clean, who possesses the strength to redeem others, to restore purity after it has been miserably lost by the individual, that someone who is capable of helping others, some people are not capable of doing that, who is capable of helping others, must spray the Mechatos and the Tomei. Why? Why is it so? And that's what the Torah has distinguished, discriminated in all other Tumes and Tumasness. All other Tumes, whoever defiled himself, let him cleanse himself. Let him plunge into a body of water, submerge as a Tomei, and reemerge as a Torah. Simple. The method is simple. The way is straight. The way leading from Tumet Tatar. In Tumet Smes, this is our trouble. What's the trouble about entering the Harabais? As far as Zov, Balkeri, Temesher, Zvila would take care of everything. Trouble is you cannot get rid of one Tumet. Tumet Smes. And the trouble is something else. We don't have a Torah Dume, not we don't have a toyer to sprinkle upon us. Who sprinkle? Everybody is Tomei now. Unless me, you are not sprinkle. Or the Melech HaMashiach, you have to start at least. Once you start, the chain reaction is serious. Apparently, Tumas Mess is singular, that Tomei cannot attain Tare completely by himself. Pertaining to other Tumas, Tare is within the reach of the individual who lost it. As regards to Tumas, the latter is of a persistent character and does not lend itself to be washed away. With plain water, another person, a Toer, must assist the Tomei, sprinkle upon him the Mechatos. Otherwise, the Tomemes will never free himself from the bondage of Tume, which holds man in its clutches and does not let him go. As a matter of fact, just parenthetically, I want to say parenthetically, Chazal has equated tshuva with tahara, with the cleansing method pertaining to tshuva. Chazal have two symbols. The mikveh is one symbol, and azoy is mechatas is the other symbol. The mikveh is one symbol, is now was introduced by Rabbi Akiva. Mikveh Yisroel, Hashem, ma mikveh metayres at herim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu metayres Yisroel. The symbol of Azoes Mayim was introduced by Chesklanore. Mizrakt aleichem mayim teherim, utahartem kilkut meyesechem, ukoldu aleichem atayres. Tshuva requires both. It's like Tumas Mes. So apparently Chet is like Tshuva Sit. To Meshmet, not to Meshmet. Because if Chet would be equated to Meshmet, then the comparison, the equation of Azoya is not Mikveh. Mikveh would be in place. The equation by Yecheskel, the prophetic equation by Yecheskel, the Zerakt Aleichem Mayim Teherim with Har to Meshil to Meshechem with Aleichem, at Ayrechem would be out of context. So Tshuva, Chet, is to be equated with the one. This to Meshmet. To Meshmet requires both. So that's why tshuva we have both. We apply both symbols to tshuva. And it is true. Tshuva, first of all, the initiative belongs to him. To the chaytri. He has got to plunge in the mikveh. If he cannot bow his head, if he's too proud to admit chotofet, if he's too vain, to regret publicly, and to change it, to amend his ways, and to change his style of life, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot do much about it. But the initiative belongs to them. The finale belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The final tahare, the final redemption from Chet, he was rakt aleichem mayim teherim etahart kosechem kol aleichem atayras. The reason now, I use reason, but don't take it too literally. It's just the reason for the distinctness of Tumas Mes. This mess is distinct, it's very persistent. It clings, it's a mind. You cannot remove it easily. I believe why is due to the uniqueness of the experience with which a man is confronted when he comes in contact with mess. Not with a nevela, not with a sheret, not with zovel zovel, but with menace. Other tumes are experienced, usually what kind of experience does, is tumas sheretz or tumas nevele, precipitate. Other tumes precipitate what kind of an experience? Well, what would you say? Basically, an aesthetic experience. Negative aesthetic experience. Ugliness. Ugliness. Ugly. It's abominable. It's obnoxious. Why is it so? Why is it so? The experience is associated, the tumor is associated, either with disease, like in the case of Mitzero, and Zov, particularly Zov, what is of his disease, and or with what? The phenomenon of a dead organism in the process of decomposition and disintegration. Nothing is uglier than that. And at least when an organism which functioned and was a living thing, suddenly is exposed, to the elements, and it, there is decomposition, decay, and disintegration. It is aesthetically ugly, and physically abominable. That's what it is. Any dead organism, such as sherets, nevele, is a source of filth, squalor. The organism is in the process of dissolution and decomposition. It is a sin which causes unpleasant emotions to arise. So it means all other tumes can be subsumed under the category of ugliness or unpleasantness. Leprosy is an example par excellence of that. Tumes mass, what is the experience of tumes mass? Ugliness? No, it's not ugliness. Not ugliness. Tumes mass constitutes a category per se. Of course, a dead man is ipso facto, a dead organism, of course. And whatever we said of the animal cadaver may also be said of the human body, of the human lifeless body, correct? Which is also exposed to the ugly process of decay and decomposition. However, there is something horrible when we come in contact with dead men, which you don't experience when we come across a cadaver of a dead animal, of an animal. Death is far, death, and this is because the concept of death differs. If applied to animal, then when applied to man, death, as far as the theological kingdom is concerned, is not a monstrosity. At least you don't experience it as a monstrosity. All death destroys is the functionality of the organism as regards. However, as regards human death, the latter terminates not just functionality of an organism. What does it terminate? No, what does it terminate? A spiritual personality. A being. A spiritual personality. The man is not just an organism. Regardless of all the philosophies pertaining to man, materialism, idealism, spiritualism, I don't care. But everybody, even the greatest of all materialists, we have to say that there is a spiritual I abiding in man. Let him pursue his idea that the spiritual personality is a result of material combination of material forces, of biochemical functions, of processes. I don't care. But there is a spiritual personality in the person. He terminates a personality. It terminates an existential dimension, an individuality which is self-aware, self-conscious, a personality which is driven by vision, hope, a personality which rejoices or despairs, which grieves, a personality which anticipates events and remembers events. A personality which lives not only in the present moment, but in retrospection and in anticipation. A personality which builds plans and builds the world and destroys them. In a word, death, human death, means destruction of a world. Is a tragic experience, is the most tragic experience of the human being. He is endowed, and of course, he is endowed with the time awareness. He knows that his existence is a mockery. He knows of God, and he is committed to him while alive. But he knows that after he'll die, he won't be able to continue the service of God. That was one of the very strange. Chazal tell us that Anoim were afraid of death because death who would interrupt their service of God. You know the Gemara? Yes, Yofi Shoach as a Perek is correct. But there is a Gemara. A Rebbe before he died, cried. Peril mitzvahs batei aleihem. Is the bliss of the blissful existence of hereafter does not compare with the great joy that one experiences while engaging in Torah and mitzvahs. He knows of God and is committed to Him while alive. After that, everything will be destroyed. And let's not forget something else. In the animal world, the death of the individual is not tragic because the existence of the genus is not menaced by the death of an individual. This individual does not exist in the animal world. There is no individualistic existence among the brutes or the beasts. The individual exists as a representative of the class. Hence, the death of the individual is not considered tragedy because the class will survive, will continue to exist. Among people, the situation is completely different. The individual does not lead a representative, but an autonomous existence. The animal, the individual animal, leads a representative existence. He exists on behalf of somebody else. Who is this somebody else? The species, the genus, the class. Yes. He per se does not exist. This is my money. Those ideas are my money, and even though you can trace it back to Aristotle and Plato, but basically my mind is developing beautifully. Beautifully. However, an individual has his own rights to existence. He exists not as a representative, as a messenger, as an attorney, as a spokesman for somebody, but on his own behalf. It's an independent existence. Among people, the situation is completely different. The individual does not lead a representative, but an individualistic, autonomous existence. Each individual is an individuality. Each individual is individuality, a personality, a macrocosm. The existential legitimacy is not the class or the species or the genus to be found in the species or in the class, but in the individual himself. That's why death of the individual is absurd and existentially abominable. I don't remember where I told it to you. I heard it from somebody, this story. It is a true story. It reflects our approach to death, and it confirms what I said. There's somebody, the one who told me, he heard it from certain European ruler, behind the Iron Countries. I may say the name, Sisesco in Romania. That he visited Sadat a few weeks before the famous Yom Kippur, famous or not, Yom Kippur. No, I couldn't say Yom Kippur, infamous. I cannot say that. But he's tragic Yom Kippur, anyway. He's tragic Yom Kippur. And they've discussed, the matter of the war. Next war, everybody knew about it. They're accepted. So he told the war of Sadat not to start the war, because you know the Jewish army is superior. And Sadat gave in. He admitted that he has military army, it's a lost cause. But there is another reason for starting the war. And he said it, and he pulled a drawer out, Sadat, and took some clipping from a paper and gave it to Sesko. Sesko took the clipping of the paper and saw the script is unknown to him. It's completely not Latin script. But what kind of a paper? It was a Hebrew paper. What is the name of the paper? Mari, in red letters. So what do you see here? Take a look at the paper. I said to him, Sesko, I cannot read. I don't know it. It's Chinese. He said, well, take a look at this picture. So he took a look. What kind of a picture? a young boy in uniform. He says, what are you showing me? He says, you know who this young boy was? What do you mean was? I said, he's dead now. He was a soldier. He was killed on the front, along the Suez Canal. And the Jewish people mourned for him. His picture is on the front page of the paper. Such a people cannot live long in a war of attrition. If every individual is dear to them, and they grieve and mourn for every individual, they'll have to lose the war. No matter how wonderful their weapons are. This is exactly what I told you. And this exactly is true. All the gratitude to Nixon and Kissinger for the separation treaties, which you know very well are not, do not give too much protection to Israel, which are a menace, is due to one fact only. And I'm pretty sure if there were a plebiscite in Israel now on the separation treaties, that 99% of the population would vote in favor of them. And 99% of the population knows that those treaties are not worth the paper they are written on. But the fear on me, that young men should not die, the eagerness to save a life, to protect the young boy, overrides every fear and every logical consideration. And this is exactly what I told you. How does it mean one died? One died, the world died. The world collapsed. It's a true story.
Yeah.
The world collapsed. Hence, the Tume is not you. The Tume Smith is not a result of organic death, but of spiritual death. It is the expression of the human fright and terror, of human helplessness in face of a mocking Satan. Tumesmes is the result of a traumatic experience, not ugliness, but of trauma, that discloses men's, that dislocates men's self-awareness and existential security. Death lurks in the shadows. Death defeats everyone, great or small, clever or simple. Hakeil kasher hakeil, mikre echad lekulam. That is tumesmes. That's why tumesmes is a tume per se. Hence, the tumesmes represents not just an experience of ugliness, but the human situation, if you know the term, the way existentialists use it. They understand by a situation from which man cannot explicate himself. It's a predicament. It's a situation which makes man's life nonsensical, tragic, and a situation from which he cannot save himself. It is the human tragic and human absurd density, destiny. No, to cleanse the human being from Tume in the manner one cleanses himself from Tume Sheretz is absurd. Tume Sheretz is an experience of problems can be washed away with water, very simple. Such Tume Smith, since Tumas Meir, the experience is interwoven into the very texture of the human existential experience. And that's why Tumas Meir requires a different method of cleansing, a dual method of cleansing. It was not, the tefillah was not abundant. The tefillah accepted, but tefillah is not enough. You need more than tefillah. What do you need? Yes. To cleanse the human being from Tume in the manner one cleanses himself from another, from Tume Sheretz, is absurd, since Tume Smith is a part of our own existential experience. But it is the Tume, the cleansing is a dual one. What does mean a dual Tume, a dual cleansing? Basically, the final cleanser is God. When? When Bila Moves Lezach, Mocha Deshem Dima Opponent. In the age of eschatology, in the eschatological era, and the whole world will be cleansed. Nature, man, organic nature, inorganic nature, then man will rid himself of that curse. What is he supposed to do in the meantime, in the interim, so-called? What is he supposed to do in the interim, man? Man, on the one hand, must struggle with that. Yehadus has never given up. Yehadus has never given up. Yehadus is very aggressive. Yehadus is very bold in its approach. Just as no, it means, since you cannot defeat death, do nothing? No. You've got to plunge into the mikveh. Cleanse yourself. Not completely, you'll never get it without Azoyah, but at least partially, you may cleanse yourself. Man, on the one hand, must struggle with death, try to defeat it. The cleansing from Tommy Mess requires Tvile. The human effort in reducing the power of death, of prolonging life, is a dignified and significant gesture. You know how positively he had the thought of scientific medicine. No other philosophy in the world has thought in such positive terms as Yahadus of scientific medicine. The Tere, the Rappi Yerape, Rappi Yerape, Chazal, Yom Kippur, Machil Meisal Pireifim, who determines whether the patient is supposed to fast or not to fast. The Reife, the expert, the scientifically trained expert. Yahadus believed that in the course of time, men will succeed not to defeat death completely, but to tame the death monstrosity, to limit its power. However, and that's why Tzvile is in place. However, Yehadus was not naive to have unrestricted faith in human scientific capability to eliminate death and to raise men to the rank of immortals. The plague of death, he had said, maintained, will trouble man for a long, long time. I'm not speaking here about longevity. Longevity is something else. When the scientists speak about longevity, I understand. But when they speak about immortality, it's ridiculous. Death, the plague of death, Yehadus maintains, will trouble man until, for a long, long time, until the Almighty will save us, will save man from the care of death. Dila amores lenetzach, mocha deshem dila makroponim. Death will vanish, and the Almighty will wipe off the tears of every countenance. How can man redeem himself from death? How can he cleanse himself from the fright of death? How can he attain tahara from the defilement by death? So again, I repeat, through a double procedure. Through tvile, an organized scientific medical effort to limit the power of death as much as possible, then man cleanses himself from tumas mes, the way that Tommy Sheretz does cleanse himself. However, death requires another method of cleansing. Namely, by Azoyas, placing our trust in the Almighty, and at the same time, expect that the day, no matter how slow it is in coming, of your final arrive, the death will be defeated. This is the Azoyas. And the Medrash says beautifully, Vizu atoyer ze HaKadosh Baruch Hu, al atome zeo adam zeo. The final, ultimate cleansing cannot be accomplished by men himself. Now let's continue. So if you ask me, what is the Zeis Chukah Satero, the great Chukah? What is Zeis Atero Odom Kiyomus Be'el? What is it? What does it refer to? The great chukah, the great mystery, is death per se. Death is the great mystery. The unintelligible experience, the chukah or the Torah, that no one can grasp. this terror, the most, the greatest mystery of all, is the fact as Adam Kiyomus Boer. And if Adam Kiyomus Boer, if those who aren't there are defiled, not because they saw something ugly, not ugly, because they saw something, they experienced the trauma. How can he cleanse himself of that fright, of that horror, of that grisly horror? The lokhula tome ma 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 farsri fasachatos the nosnu mayim chayim al kelly. And who is the one who sprinkles? The Almighty. I did not answer yet my first question. How is Lucas Apollo the introduction to my Yeveo Koleido? But you, I believe you begin to see light now. We read last Shabbos Kerach. The Shabbos before us, we read Shlach. I mean, this Shabbos will read Chukas. Let me continue now. Unless you're tired. I'm not through yet. Again, is a mic working? If the mic didn't work, he would have been sentenced to at least 5 years jail. I did not answer yet my first question. How is Lucas Apollo the introduction to my Yeveo Koleido? But you, I believe you begin to see light now. We read last Shabbos Kerach. The Shabbos before us, we read Shlach. I mean, this Shabbos will read Chukas. Let me continue now. Unless you're tired. I'm not through yet. Again, is a mic working? If the mic didn't work, he would have been sentenced to at least 5 years jail. Between Kerach and Parsha Shnia, let's forget now about the Parsha Chukas. But Cheney, I believe it's Cheney or not Cheney. By way of Koleido or Midwat Fins, Cheney, it's not Slichin, no, it's a part of Cheney. It's a part of Cheney. I would advise it up in the Chumash Shemira. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, to eliminate the Parsha, the section dealing with Torah Adumah, start with by Yoseu Koleido, by Midwat Fins, by Thomas Shemira. Yeah. The last parsha was, what was the last parsha we read? Kerach.
Correct.
Between the few words, between the last words, the Sisal of Chayt, Ba'achim, Arimchem, Eschal, Ben, Imenu, the Scotch of Yisrael, Eschal, and Eschamus, the last words of Kerach. And, Ba'yavei of Yisrael, Kol Eidom, Mitvatzin, lies a space of 38 years. Terrible gap. Of 38 years. Kerach. The Kerach incident happened to, you don't know, Rishonim disagreed, either before the Meraglim or after the Meraglim. But it happened in the second year. After Aaron, you understand very well, was elected as the archpriest and the high priest, and the Shevet Levi was designated as the tribe of service to God. Yes. All right, fine. When we recite
ויימר ונו יברסאי ונו יריסאית את לה שבס, ויימר על השם על הארץ, אתו ובנך ובי סביחו איתך, תיסו, אסבין המקדוש, הוא יריד, הוא ירד, והוא יריד, about the prophecy, and about the conversation, between the Almighty and Aaron, which took place, the second year following the Exodus. ונו יוריד שבס ויובאו בני ישראל כל העדו מתבצעים בחידש הראשון וישבו עם בקודש ואתומו שם מיליון ותקובו שם וידיעו בזנרנט which transpired in the 40th year after those people who participated in the Exodus died in the wilderness. Rashi says, כל העדו, העדו השלמו, שכבר מייסו, מייסי מדבור, ואלו פר של החיים. The congregation and its integrity, for those who are to die in the wilderness, in consequence of their sin, had already died. But those have been expressly mentioned for life. It tells the gap of 38 here. It's a black gap. It is strange. Strange that the Torah in its five books has told us the story of Israel and Moshe and Aaron and the Cain and Levin only for 2.5 years, for 2 years, for a year and a half, and 38 years. I mean, the Torah did not say anything what happened during those 38 years. You know, the Torah has recorded only 2 years of Israel's sojourn in the desert. 38 years remained anonymous. We have no record of the event which transpired. What did they do? It's a natural question. I would give them my right arm to know. What did they do? All right, fine. 38 years. What did they do? What happened after? People, I mean, so much happened in 2 years. So what happened in 38 years? What did they do? What did they say? What did Moshe do during those long, dreary, long years? Everything is enigmatic, mysterious, frightening. There is a gap of 38 years between Parshas Kerach and Vayoveu Bnei Yisrael Midvartzim. Where can we find something, at least a clue, to the story of the 38 years? Where can we find it? What? Where can we find it? Where can we find a clue, at least something, I mean? The Torah? The bridge? See, the bridge from the last words in Kerach to the Vayavei of Nisrael Midvartzim is the Chukah of Poradum. Mystery. This is the bridge. The bridge from Pora Adoma Zeis Atere Odom Kiyomuz Baer. This is a great mystery of life. Odom Kiyomuz Baer is the bridge which spans the gap of 38 years. What happened? How sadly Meisha Rabbeinu summarizes the 38 years sojourn in the wilderness. He devoted just a few sentences to the event which occurred during that length of time. The sentences are saturated with grief. Vatoshuvu, that's what Meshe says, Hester tells us the story of the Meraglim, in Dvorim, that's what it's going. Vatoshuvu, Vatisku, Vishnei Hashem, we came back from them, we wanted to go out, climb up the hill, Vayetza, Meir, Vayakeitzom, Vatoshuvu, Vatisku, Vishnei Hashem, Vileshoma, Hashem, Bekelchem, Vilehezin, Alechem. Very strange. ותשבו בקודש יומם רבים כיומם אשר ישבתם. זה רצרנש יומם רבים כיומם אשר ישבתם ונפן וניסה מדבורו דרך ימצו. זה כבר רטריטת כאשר דיבר עד השם אלוהים ונוסו וסרסיו יומם רבים והיומם אשר הולכנו מקודש בניה עד אשר עברנו נחל זורת שלוש מושמנו שונו אתם כל עדי רנשי המלחומו מקרב המחנה וגם יד עד השם מויסו בום Nehuma mekerav ha-machne ha-tumom. And so what is it? In short, the 38 years empty space between Kadesh Barnea and the resumption of the march to the promised land was in Nira of what?
Esther
Panim. That's what Meisha said. When did God reject the tears of a Jew? That time. The Leshama of Hashem became. Not only the Leshama, but the Hezim Lachem. He didn't reach it. This is the difference between Midas Adin and Hester Ponen. But Teshuva Kodesh Yom and Rabim didn't accomplish it. Nothing has been achieved. It was those years of deterioration and decay, spiritual decay. Kayom and Asher Yeshavtem, that's all it makes sense. How many days? Kayom and Asher Yeshavtem. Each day, a day is dedicated to an objective. I mean, I accomplished today what I couldn't accomplish yesterday. I accomplished nothing. Just Yom and Rabim, Kayom and Asher Yeshavtem, that's all. That's all. Vanefen Vanesa Mitbora Derach Yamsuf, we retreated. Vanosev is our fear, Yamun Rabin. The Rambam already in Ere Luchim. Basically, it is an Aristotelian thought, but the Rambam converted it to Yahadus. We are busy converting people. The Rambam was busy converting ideas. He was more successful in his job than we are in our job. What is it? To convert a goy than to convert a goyish idea. Correct, yeah, right. The Ram says circular movement means a movement where there is no achievement. It's a perennial movement, no destination. No destination. You come to the point of departure, and you begin all again, you walk around in circles and circles. This is circular movement. And according to the Ram, he explains, I mean, the circular movement of the heavenly bodies. Of the star, they are attracted by the love of God, by the Almighty. God.